בשינו ולא נו שלא יכול תרבות ומעדות היינו לך בשינו ומעולנו לך בשינו.
This is David Lichtenstein, and welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. We have a wonderful program. It's going to be our last program till after Pesach. We have Rav Hadar Margolin. He's written much for Art Scroll. He's published many Sfarim. He's a Reish Kohel in Eretz Yisrael by Rav Leib Kellerman. What is the true size of the Kazayas? Those of you who know the Mishnah Berurah says it's the size of an egg. You know, from Reb Chaim V'Lashana and the Chazanish, that is the size of an olive, the Chazanish used to use Reb Chaim V'Lashana. What is the real size? Well, have it's Erev Pesach, you know, do you have to start taking out those charts and eating an olive the size of an egg or the tenth the size of an egg, which is what the Ritzva says, or the ninth of an egg. So we will have Reb Hadar Margolin. And then I want to say over beforehand a little Pesach Torah and the Haggadah, and then I will leave you with 8 shailas on Pesach, one for each day, that maybe you'll find them interesting, maybe you'll be able to give you something to debate, to discuss with your father, with your brother, with your son, with your children, etc. So that'll be our brief Pesach program. So let me tell you over 3 thoughts on the Haggadah, which are sort of, I guess, moderna Torah. If you don't like it, I apologize. For me, for years, the Seder was always a very nervous time. I tumbled into the Seder, Erev Pesach, you know how hard the work is. And then you never know, did I do a good job? Didn't I do a good job? People are exhausted. This one's sleeping. The kids, one is arguing with the other one. How do we ever know that our Avodah of the Seder was done k'ray? So here's an amazing question. Every day by davening, 365 days a year, we say Ritzei. Abakasha, Ritzei Hashem Aleikenu v'amcha Yisrael. What does that mean? V'anisfi lasi l'cha Hashem eis ratzen. We're mispal, hopefully, maybe, find some ratzen, appeasement, satisfaction in our Avodah. Right? It's a tefillah. There's one time a year we don't have this tefillah. Pesach by night, not on Yom Kippur, not on Rosh Hashanah. You know, we say, Nirtza. It was accepted. After Yom Kippur by night, we don't say Nirtza. We say, Slach Lanu. Like Rabbeinu Yaina says, there's a virus, Yom Kippur's not Mechap before. We don't know that you had the full Mechila, there's Dargis, one layer of Mechila on top of the other, Kapara. We still have to say Slav. Maybe there are some that are only Schapa B'Misa. So we can't say Nirtza. Pesach by night, we say Nirtza. It was accepted. How do you know it was accepted? Rosh Hashanah, no. Yom Kippur, no. Sukkot, Chanukah, Purim. Seder Nirtza. So I want to share with you a Torah. And the Torah is like this. You know, there's a Rashi in Chumash brings an astonishing Havamin. It's a Sefri. Rashi says in the Pasuk, V'chiyagar itchem ger, in Bamid Bates, Rashi says, you would think that every ger that's Niskaya should bring a Karban Pesach at the time of the geras. Why? What's the svara? So on that, with the pasuk says no. Talmud lo mechukachas. Why would every ger bring a carbon pesach? Let me suggest an answer to you. Do you know that all mitzvahs asay don't have karis? And there's a logic to it. A mitzvah asay means a hisafa of kedusha. You did something good. You made more money. You got an extra job. You learned an extra bada gemara. If you didn't, okay, I didn't do that mitzvah. Karis is for when you do an aveira, you do something bad, you hurt, you kill, you're over, etc. There's 2 assays that get karis, Pesach and Mila, which is illogical. I didn't do it. I don't get the extra credit. How can I be an ugaris, and how could you say you get karis? So the Bala Machshava says something interesting. The karis is not a punishment. If you didn't do Pesach and Mila, you're punished and you get karis. It's a different type of karis. There's 2 dinim in karis. Mila means Brischa Shechasamta Bivsarenu. When you're an infant, you join the club of Klal Yisrael. You are now not a Ben Necher. You have joined the club. Shalei Midas, you are now one of the Bnei Bris. Right? You have a Bris, you're a Ben Bris. You join the club. The chorus of not having Mila, it's not a punishment. It's just you never joined the club. You didn't become part of Knesset Yisrael. You didn't define who you are. The Karban Pesach is called Avoida. Moha Avoida Zais. What does that mean? It's the first time Klal Yisrael said, we have service. We have Avoida. Mishchu Yedeichem Menatzayin. Stop following all those easy inclinations and enter into a service. Go against your nature. Enter into a life of Avoida for a higher cause. A mission in life. Pakaid Pakadati. You are a Pakud. You have a mission. So this not bringing a Pesach, it's not that you did something wrong. It's except you weren't one of the Makabli oil. You didn't accept a life of a mission, a life of purpose. If you didn't, you're Agarisin, you're Nichras, but not as a punishment. You just never had that exalted life. So Pesach represents Moha Avoida. We accept to live on a higher lifestyle for a higher meaning. So that's why Rashi says, brings us a free. You would think every ger right away, whenever he's Makabal Geris, it could be Chanek, has to bring a Karban Pesach. What does that mean? The entry into Avoida. Kamash Bolan Chuko Echas. So comes out, what is the Avoida of the night of Pesach? It's a very simple Avoida. I join the club. Just like when you have a bris, it's without das. The infant has no das. Bris Rashi, he is now a Ben Bris. Avoida means I join the club. I showed up, I voted, I wrote my name down. That's all that it requires. So that's why you say Nirtza. All the nights of the year, all the tefillahs, Ritzei, please accept our tefillah. Is it good enough? Here, if you show up, it's good enough. And why does this make me happy? By the Seder, how many of us, look, the kids are fighting, I'm exhausted, your wife is probably comatose, if she's been taking care of Pesach, right? Cleaning, etc. Who feels, and then you sit by the table and you hear the other one, they finished the Seder 3 hours later. Their singing was 10 times as nice. And then you're sitting and the kids say, we don't want Torah, could you please rush? We're starving, bring us to Shulchan Aruch. And you're thinking, what kind of an avoid is this? And that, what do we say? Nirtza! All you had to do was show up. If you showed up, if you part of the you are now part of the Bnei Bris, you're accepted, you're on board. That was the only requirement. And it answers a kashi, you know, the Gemara says in Chulan, I forget, I think it's Kuf Yud Gimel or Kuf Chav Gimel, you're not allowed to teach Torah to a Rasha. But Pesach by night, ki luzoirik evin lamarkulis, it says. Pesach by night, the Rasha is so sharp, we teach him Torah. How are you allowed to do that? Tonight is special. Tonight, if you show up, you count, you're in. Rasha, Tzadik, Be'arba Banim, all you have to do. So no matter what type of a Seder, you can't get upset. There's a Haftacha, Nirtza, you showed up, we showed up, it's accepted, so relax and enjoy your Seder. Could you make a little hefsek? And I want to say two other Tyrus. Okay, I want to share with you a thought about the matzah. And it's a modern vart, right? But I want to say, I'm titling this vart, Who's Your Pare? Right? Matzah, the Maral says, is about freedom, right? And the Maral explains it like this. He says, everything starts off as flour and water. And what happens? And it rises, it puffs, it puffs, it puffs. But in its essence, it's flour and water. And let me tell you how I understand. The source of all babka, brioche, fancy egg challah, 7-layer cake is the flour and water of matzah. You know what this is? Did you ever go to a kindergarten, you know? I was Zeicha this Pesach, my Edim from Eretz Yisrael, my son-in-law, the big Talmud Chacham, the Rav, the Musmach, came in and he brought his children and they're playing in the house. And I see the little kids and they play so intent with their cars. They're so present and they're so real. You know, if you ever go into a kindergarten, and what happens in the kindergarten? The teacher asks a question, what color is this? And all 30 kids start screaming. Now go to a Beis Medrash class or go to a college. And a professor is sitting there with 100 people and he says, who has an answer to this question? And out of 100, nobody raises their hand. What happened between kindergarten and Beis Medrash or college or high, whatever it may be? What happened? You know what happened in between? People. You picked up your hand and somebody snickered to the next desk. The girl at the next desk, the boy, if you're, whatever it may be, they snickered, they laughed, the teacher covered their mouth. They said, what kind of stupid question is this? Somebody said to you, you call that a jacket? That's a jacket? Where did your parents get your clothing? What type of car did your father show up in? Is that where you live? That's your haircut? Really? What's that pimple on your face? What happens between kindergarten, between those little kids playing so intense, so real who they are, other people happen. And you know what happens? We stop living our lives as to who we are. And all our lives are based upon what others' opinions. Will they smirk? You know how painful that is? We give over who we are to the approval of others. We lose our essence. Great spirits encounter smirks and small minds, and they get crushed. And that is the opposite of chayrus. Chayrus is when you could be yourself, when you are free of parei. Today we live in a world, Baruch Hashem, we're not under the Tsar, we're not under Chas V'Shalom Germany, we're not under the Polish, we're not under all the different types of tyranny that the world has seen. We live in a free world, but there's a new tyranny. You know who the new parei is? That's right. It's probably the person sitting right next to you. It's the school. It's work. It's the people on the street. It's all the people we're buying nice clothing for. Well, like a girl wrote in once, she said, or was it a guy? I don't remember. He said, I'm spending money for a wedding to money I don't have to impress people I don't know and I don't like. And that is what this is the new pare. So freedom comes when you stop caring about what others think of you and when you go back to who you, what your essence really is, flour and water. Before the yeast blew up and defensive and inhibitions and etc., when we can go back, Hinar Yisrael Vayhavai, we can be young again, we can go back to our essence. You know that I heard a story years ago. I think I've said it before, but it talks about a person who was really free. The Diet of Yerushalayim was Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Shverer Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, the big goyin, and he had a lot of animosity in Yerushalayim because he worked. So he was the Rav Mitam HaMedina. He was the Rav Rashi of the city. So the Eidach Redis was had a lot of animosity towards him. So he once came to Bar Mitzvah. They asked him to come to a Bar Mitzvah. And the father of the Bar Mitzvah Bacher was opposed to Rav Frank. And he had the Bar Mitzvah boy give his whole drasha to shlug up, to refute a treatise that Rav Tzvi Pesach had written in the Har Tzvi. And the boy gets up and he says this whole speech and he's sitting in the audience that there's a raya from a Tosfos against him here and a Rambam here and the whole piece is wrong. Tzvi Pesach is sitting, nodding. Afterwards, somebody comes over. He says, Nus, are you going to change the piece? Are you going to take it out? He said, no. Tais says he didn't understand Pshana. Tais says he didn't understand Pshana. He says to him, "Sir, excuse me, Rav, why didn't you speak up? So Rav Tzvi Pesach looked at him, surprised. He said, speak up. Why would I speak up? It's not my bar mitzvah. It's his bar mitzvah. This is a person who was free. He did not have parei. So what do I say? We live in a free world today, but you could still be a meshubed. Do you know the head, the most powerful man in the world today, the president of the United States, if somebody tweets, it could be a janitor in Mississippi, something that embarrasses him, he'll respond to him. So you could be the most powerful man in the world and not be a ben chayrin. You're an eved to others' opinions. You have parai, right? You're meshubid l'parai b'mitzrayim. So what should we say when we eat the matzah, when the morale says we go back to essence, we go back to simplicity, we go back to before we had to blow ourselves up and pretend with this and pretend like that. We should go back to fight von der Welt, where we could really be free. We could say, this is who I am, and I'm going to celebrate who I am and live the life that I want, not a life to make others happy. That is a cheiros that even in America today we can aspire to. Chag Kosher v'Sameach. I want to share one last vart. Again, it's a moderna vart. The Rashi says, "Moha avoida azayis lachem, va'af atay hakei eshina ve'amar loy, ilu hayasham loy hayanigal." I want to say a moderna taych on the ben harasha. Moha avoida azayis lachem. You know, most kids at risk, right? Well, most kids who have questions, they're not bad. It's the part of us that is the ben harasha. What is it? It's a question we want an answer to, and it's probably a good question. Kids ask questions. They say, you know, this is a contradiction. If the Rebbe said this, why this? Or if the Rabbeinu Shalom watches over us, why did this somebody do? Why is Russia v'tovlei tzadik v'ralei? He says, why do we have so much? We found the perfect way. Why are there so many parnasa problems? Why are there so many girls without shidduchim crying? Why are there so many older singles? Why are so many people struggling with illness? Why is there so much unhappiness? Why so much dysfunction? So much marital discord? Divorce, shalom bias issues. These are the questions the child answers. And you know that if you went to a yeshiva like I did, if you asked a question that was unpopular, what did you got? You got shot down really very quickly by the anhala. Right? So he asks, Moha avoida azayis lachem? What is it? It doesn't make sense. V'af ata hakei yeshina. Like we said in the past, hake is not with a chaf, which means to knock. It's just amaratus. Hake here means with a kuf. It means to blunt. Blunt is bite. And what do you say? Ilu hayasham lo hayanigal. You were in Mitzrayim. What does that mean? What happened in Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim was a pretty terrible place. The Yidin there, they were pretty bad. It says they were in Mem Tes Sharei Toma. That's pretty bad. Do you know that when it says Hachaydish is Alachem, Bachaydish is Atem Negalim, the Medrash says, they said, how could we be Negalim? They said to Moshe, we have no Maisa type. We don't have a single Maisa. We did everything that you could do wrong. Gili Arayas, Avaydazara, Shvichas Damim, they said, we have no Maisim. Whole Mitzrayim is full of our Avaydazara. They were worse than any Yid you know. But we were Nigal. What does it mean we were Nigal? Rambam says, Kemat Kot, any Zecher of Avraham Avinu almost disappeared. But what is Geula? Geula says, it's true, we're really bad, but you know what? We're going to be better. Let's look for a solution. So what do we tell the Ben HaRasha? You have real questions. I have real questions. Each of us has a Ben Chacham in us, a Ben Rasha in us. I have a real question. The solution is not to throw up your hands and to say, Mahavayda Zayzvachem. The solution is, how do we fix things and make them a tiny little bit better? When we see a chayla, how can we help the chayla? When we see a child who's struggling, like the fellow of Amudim does, the tzaddik tzviklok, how do we help them? Geula is when we say, what can we do about it? How do we become a shutif with kaviyachal and maisa bereshis and fix it a little? That is geula. Geula, he says, is ilu hayisham lahinigal, you would have thrown your hands up. That is not the solution to these wise questions. The solution is, What is, how do we fix things a tiny little bit? So what's the avoda? Where Geula is to make tomorrow, today, just a little bit better than yesterday. If we could do that, then we are on the path to Geula. So I'm going to leave you with 8 chaylis to think about over Pesach. Some are easier, some are harder, some are more lumdish. Let me start with one. You know, the famous Ramban in Kiddush Lamed Daled says, he says, Sfiras Omer is not a mitzvah saseh, shazman grama. He says, Nashim are mechuyev. Pella. How could Nashim be mechuyev? What? Sfarat abachav. Sheva Shabbos is 3 minutes right after Pesach. It certainly sounds like a mitzvah saseh, shazman grama. So the great Divrei Yecheskel, Rashivan Brisk, he says a famous teretz. He says the Ramban holds it's not dependent on a day, but it's dependent on miyoyim havoas ha'omer. It's from an event. So he says if you would bring the omer Chanukah time, that's when it would start Sfiras Omer. If you would bring it Purim, Rosh Hashanah, so it's not a day of the month. It's based upon an event. And that's why it's not a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, anashim amachoyev. That's a Divrei Yecheskel, Simon Menhei. So here's the question that the Paiskim all bring, that Nashim are pata from Kiddush Levana. So the question is, according to the Ramban, why would Nashim be pata from Kiddush Levana? Because the Mitzvah Sheish has Mangrama, Kiddush Levana is from the Mailad. The Mailad is also an event when the first sliver of the moon comes out. If the first sliver of the moon would come out in the middle of the month, that's when we'd be Mekadesh Shlavana. If it would come out the 15th, the 20th, the 30th, whenever it came out, so why isn't Kiddush Levana Daima to Sfiras Omer? It's event-based, not time-based. And therefore, Nashim, like the Ramban, should be Pata from Kiddush Levana. This is a question on the way the Divrei Yecheskel understands the Ramban. Here's another question. The Gemara says, Adaf Lamed Ches, that you need Lachem by Matzah. The Gemara learns it from Maisa Sheni, Tumam and Gavoy and Ayotza. So the Gemara says, you need Lachem by Matzah. So did you ever see, when you have a guest by the Seder, why don't we have to be makne him the Matzah and say, here, Reb Yid, I'm being makne you the Matzah, so you should be Makayim Matzah, that's Lachem. Fabulous question. I didn't see this question anywhere. If somebody could please share it, I'd appreciate it if you have an answer. Okay, here's another question. The Avudraham in the Seder Haggadah says that you don't make a bracha v'tzivanu lishtos dalet kaisis. Baruch atah Hashem alekeinu melech alam hashik v'shanu tzayis v'tzivanu lishtos dalet kaisis. Why not? You say alachilas matzah. You say alachilas mor asher kiddushan tzayisvanu alachilas mor. Why don't you make an adalat kaisis? So the Avudraham says, the Archas Chaim brings him, he says, because any mitzvah that you can't do at one shot, but it's iterative, it happens over a period of time, you can't make. I guess maybe you won't finish it. Right? He doesn't say the reason, but he says it has to be bevasachas. Matzah's bevasachas. Mor's bevasachas. Chanukah mehadlakas. Neris is bevasachas. Shaif is a... This is Shaifer Yaitza right away. See, even though Shaifer is over a few minutes, but he says the halach is by Dalit Kaisis, if you drink them bevasachas, one after the next, you're not Yaitza, you have to have Haggadah in the middle. So he says that's not cool. So the question is, Darach HaSchaim also brings the Bahag, that Sfiras Omer, if somebody forgot one of the Yemei Omer, you don't count again. That's taka how we paskin. Why? Because you need tmimais. And if you missed one of the 49, you're not yaitza, because it's all one mitzvah. It's chativa achas. Otherwise, he doesn't say that. He says you need tmimais. And yet we make a brach al sfiras aimer. So the question is, leiter chaschayim, why on dalet kaisis? You don't make a bracha because you say you can't be yaitza them bevasachas. This separation between them. Sfiras Omer, that's going to take 49 days. You make a bracha, even though it takes 49 days. Rachas Chaim Paskins like both. that you don't make a bracha on Dalet Kaisis, but you do make a bracha on Sfiras Aimer, even though it takes 49 days to finish it. What is the difference? Okay, here's a third question. The Mishneh Berurah in Tafresh Tzadik Beis Aleph brings the Magen Avraham that the Bircha Shechiyanu that you make by Mikra Megillah on Yom Purim, you have to have Kavana, for Mishlayach Manis, for Sudas Purim, all the mitzvah matanis levyanim, all the mitzvah sayayim. If you go to shul, they give a clap on the bima. And they say, please have kavana with the shechiyanu to mekayim, all the mitzvah sayayim. Why, by the seder, you make one shechiyanu in the beginning of the night? Why don't you find the Magen Avraham in the Mishneh Berurah says the father should have to give a clap, or whoever it is leading the seder should give a clap and say, please have kavana with the shechiyanu to be yitza, the birth of Dawud Kaisis, Matzah, Mar, Afikaimen, etc. Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Why don't you find that the Shechiyanu, you should have to say, have Kavana should go on all the mitzvahs Hayayim? That's our next question. Here's our next question. Pesach Shechal B'Shabbos, right? Of course, we make a Seder. We make a Lachilas Matzah. The question is, Rashi in the beginning of Perek Lulav Arava brings that legabe lulav, that Chazal will mevatel the mitzvah on Shabbos, because you're afraid he's going to go to a chacham to teach him the bracha, right? Al netilas lulav. A lot of people were ignorant. They didn't have such good, fabulous school systems like we have today. People did not know how to make a bracha. Al netilas lulav was a bracha. You're afraid he would go over to the chacham with the lulav to teach him al netilas lulav. Why weren't they mevatel the achilas matzah the first night of the seder? Maybe he's going to go to a chacham to teach him the bracha. Bracha to Hashem alikenu melech elam hashikr shanum seisavet zivanu al achilas matzah. Why weren't they mevatel matzah first night, just like netilas lulav? Hemik Shaila asked this question as well as the Kli Chemda. Okay, here's another question. If you live in Eretz Yisrael, this year the last day of Pesach is Friday. Shabbos is ready, not Pesach. Are you allowed to Friday put up a chalent with beans, with kidneys, that would be mukts on Friday, because you can't use them on Friday, to eat a chalent on Shabbos? The whole head to always it is usually why, okay, we have an Eruv, you're allowed of Erev Tav Shul, and you're allowed to cook. But when you're cooking something, you're always cooking something that day you could eat too. Here on Friday, you can't eat the beans. So is it mutter in Eretz Yisrael to make a cholent on Friday with beans, not barley, which is chametz, obviously, but with beans, that you would be, which is just kidneys that are not usa, that just you're not allowed to, you don't eat them. So could you make a cholent on Friday for Shabbos, or do you say no? On Friday, they're mukter because you can't be metalful the beans on Yom Tif, and therefore you can't make it for Shabbos. Okay, here's a question, an interesting Shaila. So last year, we had by the Seder a lady, a Balas Tshuva, and after the Seder, she comes and she says, you know, I'm so happy I did the Seder, I ate the matzah, the mur, the old kaisis. She says, even though I know Nashim, ladies don't have to do the mitzvahs, but I do all mitzvahs, I sit in the sukkah, right? A machmir, and tonight, I ate the matzah, because I like a woman. I guess she's not a feminist, she's a machmir, but she says, I want to do all the mitzvahs, kitikunai, and therefore I ate the matzah. So here's the question. Let's say somebody, the first night of Sukkot, gets tzimisht, maybe he had too many l'chaims, he drank a little bit, he thinks it's the second night of Sukkot. So he ate in the sukkah, the kezayis, to be yaitza a drabanan. There's no mitzvah the second night. There's no chiyuv. So he had kavana to eat the kezayis in the sukkah, but for the second night's mitzvah, not the first night, which is a deraisa. Do you say he's yaitzah the deraisa? We hold mitzvah srichas kavana. He had kavana to be yaitzah drabanan. He didn't have kavana to be yaitzah deraisa. Would he have to eat another kezayis in the sukkah? Why is that? So this lady, she mixed up matzah, which is a chiyuv daraisa for nashim, with achila suku, which nashim are only, it's a drop, it's only a kiyum, it's not a mitzvah chiyuvah. She has no chiyuv deraisa. So you say she would have to eat again the matzah. Do you say if somebody had kavana to be yaitza mitzvah, that's not a chiyuv? It's not exact comparison, by the way, to the first and second night. One's a drabana, one's a deraisa. Here is mitzvah chiyuvis, legabe a mitzvah kiyumis. Eating it because she's ein mitzvah of aisa, she's not mechuyev. She did it because she was ein mechuyev. She thought she's doing it because Nashim could be yaitza like the Ramah. They can make a bracha, etc. Our Nashim, she didn't know that she's mechayiv. Is a new did a mitzvah srichas kavana? Would you have to do a new achila when you mechave not for the daraisi, you mechave either for a mitzvah kiyumis or for drabanan? Let me give you one last question. And this is a question we saw for Rabbi Yisrael Yankee Fisher. He asks in Evan Yisrael, the Mishneh Berurah brings in Taf Lamed Beis Cotton Ches that Ktanim Anemon Fabadikas Chametz, because it's a Drabanan, and Himnud Rabbanan Bidrabanan. So he asks a fabulous question. He says this, that Ktanim, you could use them for Badika because they're Neman. It's great that they have an Emanis, but Ktanim Alav B'nei Shlichas, how will you Yaitza a Mitzvah's Badika by a cotton who's lav b'nei shlichas? A neman is a yah, a shliach is an isht. How will you be yaitza mitzvahs bedikas chametz? That is my next question. And here's one last question. This is a riddle, very cute, Shaila. I heard this from my friend Reb David Apta. He said, the halach is you have to eat matzah beseba. Let's say somebody ate b'li haseba, without the Rav Yah, you're not Yaitza Yidei Chayvasei. So he ate matzah shalai besei, but he's about to eat matzah again, and his Rebbe walks in. Now what's the halacha? When your Rebbe is there, you don't eat b'li haseba. So do you say eats again matzah shalai haseba? Or do you say no? By Reish Chodesh, there's a famous machloikis, the Mishneh Berurah brings in Simon Kuf Ches of Lamed Beis. Somebody's mispal mincha of Shabbos, without saying, he said a weekday davening, Shabbos Mincha. So then it comes Ma'ariv, so he has to be Mashlim. So he says, what is he going to be Mashlim? Another Ma'ariv, also not of Shabbos. And you say, what is he doing? He missed a Shabbos dika davening, so he's Mashlim it with a weekday davening. He already did the weekday davening. What do you say? No, since you weren't Yaitza, you have to do it again. So here again, you ate a chila b'lo haseba. Your Rebbe's going to come in, you're going to eat again, you're going to eat again a chila shalei b'haseba. What did you gain? So do you say you do have to eat a new chila? What do you say? No, you already were yaitza chila b'lo haseba, and you don't have to do an chila. These are my 10 shilas for Pesach. If anybody has answers, that would be great. It gives you something to discuss. Have a chag kosher v'sameach. We have the honor of having with us on the phone from Yerushalayim, Rav Hadar Margolin, who is Reish Kohel in Eretz Yisrael by Reb Leib Kellerman. He's also an author for Art Scroll. He's published a number of books, including The Lulav and Esrig. He just finished 5-volume Sefer Ramban Al HaTorah, published by Feldheim. And he's also, for this conversation, the author of a 450-page Sefer on the size of the Kezias. Welcome, Rav Margolin.
Shalom Aleichem.
So, Rav Margolin, as one of the people who grew up in America with those charts where to eat a Kezias of matzah, it's basically for mitzi matzah, it's almost the size of two machine matzahs, and or I don't know exactly, of certainly a whole regular matzah, etc. And on the other hand, we know, if we read, that Reb Chaim Volozhiner held that the size of a kezayis is a kezayis. And there's, I believe, a ritva chadoshis, that says there's something to the effect of, and you'll correct me, but There are more than 10 kizaisim in Abaya. So give us a little clarity. Are we supposed to be gorging ourselves, coming close to Achilagasa by Maitzi Matzah? Could you be Yaitzi with the real Zayas? Give us some clarity on this.
Okay, great. This is really a very, very broad topic, and I'm trying to give it all standing on one foot, as it were. We have to change what we call the muskal rishon, the assumption that we have. The simple assumption we kind of grew up with is a kazayis is very big because of all those pictures and illustrations that you mentioned. And the truth is, from many different directions, we have reason to assume as the simple assumption that the kazayis is really very small. Now, first of all, the kazayis, the shear of kazayis is not mentioned in the Torah. The Torah just says, Be'erev tochlu matzos, you have to eat. It's Halach l'Moshe miSinai, the shear of kazayis. Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai, whenever the Torah requires someone to eat, eating is defined by a kazayis. The Chazon Ish defined, he explained and clarified that since this is a shear, it cannot be connected to anything else. It's an absolute shear. Meaning, when Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jewish people, you have to eat a kazayis. Kazayis means the size of an olive. What do you expect me to do? Me, that I live today. Am I supposed to find a zayis that was that hung around from 3,000 years ago? Obviously not. So what else could possibly be said? The only logical assumption that we have of understanding the essence of a kazayis is it's the size of a contemporary olive, of an olive that we see. That's what Hashem meant when he told Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. This is all, even were we to assume that the zayis once upon a time was a lot bigger. But we have many reasons to assume not like that. For example, if we relate to this week's parsha, there's a the carb in Beis HaMikdash, they used to do an avoda called kmitza, which was taking the flour, which is between three fingers when it is cupped on the palm of the hand. The flour that's in between that is brought as the kmitza for carbon mincha in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says that every kmitza was minimum 2 kazesim. That means even for small kohanim. Everyone can check it, can try it. It is not a big shear. This is one of the proofs that the shear kazayis was always a small one. And there are many other proofs, and including that the Gemara says that when a person swallows, the Gemara in Krisus Daf Yudalud says that in a regular swallow of a person, he can swallow 2 kazayisim. So obviously it can't be such big shiurim. Now, it's going to be a challenge to explain, especially on one foot, why we grew up with such big shiurim. But essentially, there were some situations that necessitated making certain assumptions which were not accurate. What I mean is that this is not in the Gemara or in the Mishnah Brura, but it's just reality. Olives don't grow at a certain distance from the equator. And many of Rabbi Senu did not have olives and were not able to say kazayis is the size of an olive because what's an olive? It's a fruit or whatever you call it that simply was not found by them. So therefore, the halacha, the correct halacha, not the chas v'shalom made a mistake, the correct halacha for them was to define it in relation to things like an egg, a chasi beitza. And on the egg itself, there is a lot of room for analysis what the size of an egg is. And that led to all kinds of situations where the kazayis was needed to be assumed to be bigger than it really is, and that led to the big shiurim that we're used to. But once we get into careful analysis, which is what my book is about, and analyzing the reasons and the olives and so in addition to the svara I gave from the Chazon Ish that an olive is an olive is an olive, And that's a very, very strong svara. And incidentally, the Chazon Ish himself conducted himself according to that. There's also, from many different angles, clarifying that the olives always were the same size as they are today. I mentioned about
Rabbi, let me interrupt you for a minute. So you're saying the Chazon Ish said an olive is an olive is an olive. So did the Chazon Ish by his Seder actually eat matzah the size of an olive?
The Chazon Ish by the Seder ate actually matzah the size of an olive. I would like to tell you two stories. One story is with Rav Donner from London, from Stamford Hill. He has a brother, Rav Donner, in Bnei Brak. The two were Bachrim in Slobodka, and they came over to the Stipler, who, as we know, was the brother-in-law of the Chazon Ish, and put out his halachic writings on this topic. And they asked him, how much is a kazayas? And they were practical. They asked in a practical way. So they presented the Stipler with a whole machine matzah and a half a machine matzah and a third of a machine matzah. And as a joke, they put in a little sliver of a matzah. The Stipler picked up the sliver that they put in as a joke. And he said in Yiddish, but I'll say it in English, a piece about this size the Chazon Ish gave me to eat. And he said, if you want, you could eat a little bit more. This piece of matzah is today in Stamford Hill by Rav Donner. I took a picture of it, and I asked someone who was in Stamford Hill to please take a picture of it and put it near a ruler. I measured it. It is slightly smaller than the palm of a hand without the fingers.
So, but Rabbi Magolan, we would be remiss to not mention the sheet of the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Erevin brings two dais, whether it's a third or a half of an egg, right? Which would be the Machlokes, the Rambam, and Tosfos. So at the end of the day, we do have to deal with the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch seems to have the size of a kazayis is much more than an olive.
Okay, well asked. First of all, let me point out, there's no daya in Shulchan Aruch or in any Rishon that says that a kazayis is a third of an egg. All it says is that a gregaris, which is a dry fig, is a third of an egg. And we have a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Tzadi Aleph, that indicates that an olive is smaller than a gregaris. So we know it's less than a third of an egg. But how much less, we don't know, just based on this information. But there's nowhere that says that a kazayis is a third of an egg. But having pointed that out, let's go back to the question of a half an egg. What do we do with a half an egg? So here, it brings us to the analysis of how much an egg is. And here, we had questions. I don't think this is the forum to go through the whole lengthy analysis of the Tzlach, another Biuda, who brought up the discrepancy between measurements of eggs and thumbs, which have a certain relationship between them. But the Shulchan Aruch definitely did not, let me just take a step back. Because of that, there are two different opinions of how much the halachic egg is. Is it the size of our eggs or the size of or double the size of our eggs, and that's the Noda Biuda. And the Noda Biuda said that based on a question he had. We have a lot of archaeological evidence that indicates with clarity that the eggs today and the eggs of Halacha, of the Gemara times, were exactly the same size. And therefore, based on that, we can say that even were we to go with the Shulchan Aruch Shita of a kazayis being that of half an egg, we're just talking about half of today's egg and not anything bigger than that. And therefore, even that leads us to a shear, which admittedly is bigger than an olive, but not by that much.
Now, you have the Ritva, and I apologize, I saw it years ago, who says there's something like, I believe there were 10 or 13
nine
olives in an egg. Now,
yeah.
Would you say that's concordant with what the Stipler said? It's basically what the Chazon Ish, it's really the size. If we do that size of an olive, a kazayis would really be very small. Is that fair to say?
So the answer is yes, but not totally, and I'll explain. In principle, yes. In principle, if you sit down to really measure olives and measure matzah and get to the scientific number, it's going to be even smaller in a significant way than the palm of a hand. But the Chazon Ish didn't want to start measuring olives, and he wasn't a scientist, and who knows, maybe there's olives that are slightly bigger, and we're not going to start measuring the matzah exactly how thick it is, etc. So he wanted to be on the safe side. So yes, he was going with the shita of the Ritva, that the size of an olive is the koveya, but nonetheless, he took approximately the size of a palm of a hand just to be on the safe side. Anyway, it's a small shear, and we're not going into very, very detailed analysis of trying to figure out the decimal points of how big an average olive is.
So, Rabbi Margolin, if I were to sum up your sefer, and I apologize because it's impossible to sum up a 450-page sefer, but are you saying, in effect, that there are two shitas? The Chachmei Sfarad had olives, and those were, let's say, the Ritva, the Rajba, the Rambam, etc. They actually saw olives. They lived in Spain, which is known for its olive oil.
Right.
And therefore, you don't find much of a discussion in these Rishonim as to what's the size of an olive. It's like living in America today, and somebody would have this long, heated conversation as to, you know, what's the size of an orange. I mean, everybody knows the size of an orange.
Right.
Chachmei Ashkenaz, who lived in France and in Germany and in maybe some in England, but mostly Northern Europe or Central Europe, they never saw an olive in their lives because there was no way to get a tropical plant to the... in fact, I remember seeing a story. I don't remember where I saw it, but I saw a story that there were a number of Gedolim from Rabbanim from Europe who went to Eretz Yisrael sometime in the 18th century, and they traveled through Turkey. And while in Turkey, they were offered an olive, and they had never seen an olive before. And an Arab innkeeper gave them the olive, and they made a bracha with biggest lahavas. So when they ate it, and it was very sour, they spit it out, and they started screaming that the Arab is trying to poison us because they had no idea what an olive tasted like.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the Chachmei Tosfos, who says, let's say, that it's a Chatzi Kebeya, which is one of the 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch, vis-a-vis the Ritva and the Rajba and other Rishonim, who seem to them on it's much smaller, some had olives and some never had olives. And therefore, in effect, today that we have olives, and we know how we have, you write that you have, you know, we have actually olive trees that go back 3,000 years that are still producing olives. And they found in Mitzada, I believe you write, actual, you know, engravement, you know, I'm not sure exactly how they found, you know, some type of stone relics of olives. We know that the olive is the same size.
And no, they found olive pits. They found actual olive pits.
Okay, so the Metzius is Makish, what the Rishonim in Europe did not know. Is that fair to say that's one of the crux of the argument that you're making?
It's a part of it. I wouldn't say it's the focal point because I'm making the argument even according to Tosfos, etc. But it's certainly a one of the points is that once you see an olive, it takes off a lot of the discussion because once you see an olive, we all know what we're talking about. And the Rishonim, who lived in places where olives grew, never gave any discussion to it. They never said an olive is half an egg. They just said an olive, and everyone knew what they're talking about.
Now, who are the maskimim on your sefer?
So I have haskamas from, Baruch Hashem, many rabbanim from different Eidos, Ashkenazim, Sfardim, Hasidim. I have haskama from Rav Moshe Sternbach. I have haskama from I have haskama from Rav Avadya Yosef, who actually quotes me in his books and changed his shir based on my writings. I have a letter that Rav Chaim Kanievsky wrote me. He doesn't give haskamas, but he wrote me a letter of what his shir is, etc. If we have time, I would tell you a very nice story about that.
Can you please share the story?
Okay, the story goes like this. The story comes from Rav Chaim Zeivald. He lives in Givat Shaul, and he married Rav Eliashiv's granddaughter. And the Shadchan was the Kala's uncle, which is Rav Chaim Kanievsky. In Tavshin Mem Hei, on Chol HaMoed Pesach, he went with his father, Rav Shimon Zeivald, to Rav Chaim Kanievsky to say Gut Moed. and to for the Shadchanos, etc. He wrote me all this in a letter, which is in the beginning of my book. He described how it came to Reb Chaim Kanievsky's house, and all the Sfarim were covered by plastic because it's Pesach. He just had a little shas, which was kosher le Pesach. They were sitting and talking and learning. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky peeled three almonds, shkedim, almonds that were on the table, peeled three almonds and gave the chassan to eat. After he ate them, Reb Chaim told him, say a bracha achrona. He didn't feel comfortable, the boy didn't feel comfortable saying a bracha achrona and having had only three almonds. So they just kept on talking, and Reb Chaim was insistent, like, say bracha achrona, say bracha achrona. He kept repeating it and was getting uncomfortable. So the father, Reb Shimon Zeivald, said to Reb Chaim, maybe they should bring him more food. So Reb Chaim said, no. The amount that he ate, that's, you should say a bracha achrona on that. Now,
That was three almonds.
Three almonds. Now, once Reb Chaim was so insistent, there's nothing to do, so the bacher made a bracha achrona, burn a fashas, and then Reb Chaim Kanievsky smiled and he said, now I can bring you more food. But I did this in order that you should know that three almonds is enough to say a bracha achrona on that.
When
Rav Pinchas Badner, Shlita, he put out the famous Kazayas book, you know, the Feldheim book with all the pictures. So when he was in Eretz Yisrael, he spoke to Rav Zeivald, who told him the story. He said, what? Three almonds? How could that be? He says, let's go now to Reb Chaim. He said, okay, let's go now. They hopped into a car, drove from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak. Rav Badner asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky, was the story true? And he said, yes, this was the story. And if you'll see in Rav Badner's book in the beginning, he indicates the story in a few lines in the letter to Reb Chaim.
Now, do any of the Chassidish Rabbanim maskim in your book?
Chassidish Rabbanim, I got from Rabbi Yaakov Meir Stern.
Let me ask you, Rabbi Margolin, just for the sake of being fair, who fervently argues on you?
Who fervently argues on me? So Rabbi Yedidya Menat, for example, argues on me. He is calls himself Talmid of Shalach HaZonish. There is no argument between us regarding all the basic information that I gave. But his opinion is that, listen, it's true perhaps that's what the Chazanish did in his private table, in his private Seder, in his house, but that's not what he wrote in publication for the Rabbim. So that's like his point. Like when you talk about the Rabbim, is the Chazanish's hurrah to the Rabbim was presented in the bigger shir.
So why would that be? Why would he present something to the Rabbim that he didn't practice?
That's a very, very good question. Incidentally, Rav Asher Weiss, who also gave me Askama for the Sefer, and he's Hasidish, and he told me he goes with the small shir that I'm discussing. He told me he has this question that he doesn't know. Like, how is it that the Chazanish did for himself something smaller than what he told everyone? But on one foot, kind of what it would seem is the Chazanish felt uncomfortable about having, he held for himself, like there's nothing what to talk about. A kazayis is an olive, an olive is an olive, and that's it. But as far as going for the rabbim, since there were many poskim that did copy the shear of a kazayis being half an egg, and we have the whole discussion of how big an egg was, etc., he felt uncomfortable in presenting his opinion with the full blast kula that it contains within it when there are out there opinions that see the topic in a more chumrah way.
And let's be honest, Rabbi Margolin, the Mishneh Berurah himself does neman like the like Taisus, that it's a half egg. And in fact, he says because of the Noida Behuda, for achilas matzah we should be machmer, need an entire egg.
Absolutely.
So we have really a very interesting. We have many Rishonim from Sfarad who say, like the Ritva, it's a tenth of an egg. And then we have a ninth of an egg, I apologize. Then we have the Mishneh Berurah who says it's an entire egg. So it's really a very big disparity among the Shittas.
Yeah. The Mishneh Berurah is quoting it from the Tzlach, which was just the night of the Yudah. And the Noi de Biuda, I'm not trying to push the point, but the Noi de Biuda never saw an olive. It's not me saying that, it's the Yad Yehuda. Yad Yehuda is considered one of the most famous poskim in Yeridea, in Simen Mem Sif Katan Beis. He points out the Noi de Biuda was in a place that he never saw an olive. So being fair, the Mishnah Berurah did bring down the Tzlach, the Noi de Biuda, saying to go with a double egg.
Would you say that it's possible that the Mishnah Berurah never saw an olive either in his life, in all likelihood?
I would say it's possible. I spoke to my grandfather, Olav Shalom, and to the Eloi Rebbe, Zatzal, both of them from Hungary. They both told me they never saw an olive before they left Hungary. I'm not talking to you about 700 years ago. I'm talking to you about my grandfather.
So, in conclusion, if somebody were to ask a Rav, and you're lucky, Reish Koyel, a Rav, and says, what do I do? Do I do like the Mishnah Berurah and eat an entire egg? Do I eat like the Paiskim who say, okay, you should eat a half egg? Or do I go like the Chazei Nish, who in public wrote the Shir of the Chatzi Beyah, which is the Chumrah, the Tzada Yaisa Chumr, like Taisfis and the Ri in Shulchan Aruch, even though it brings also the Rambam, which is a third of an egg, or the way he practiced? How would you tell us? What would you tell people to do?
I ask you because
we have thousands of people listening.
Right. I have very, very clear guidelines on this. We'll divide it into three levels, and that is what's recommended for everyone, what's recommended as a hiddur, which is bigger, and what we would tell someone who needs to minimize the shear. And because many people have health issues and are not able to eat the bigger shear. What I recommend for people who are healthy is, if you want to know the Iker Hadin to be Yotzei, all the Shitas in Rishonim, it would be, I'm talking in samak, which means cubic centimeters or milliliters, it would be 20 milliliters, 20 samak, which is approximately the size of a third of a machine matzah, or like the palm of the hand with the fingers. If you do that, frontline Olam Haba. That sounds good.
How big is that compared to an egg?
This would be the size of half an egg without the peel, when we measure the volume.
Okay.
Okay? Now, someone who is young and healthy and is able and is not limited, I would say, you know what, go for it and eat up to two-thirds or three-quarters of the size of a machine matzah. By the way, if you're eating machine matzah or a hand matzah, they're both approximately the same thickness. So when I say machine matzah, this just indicates the surface area, right? So you can have two-thirds or three-quarters of a machine matzah or the corresponding area in a hand matzah. And then you've been Yotzei the opinion of the Mishnah Berurah also, who's certainly a respected opinion, as we all know. Plus, I would point out that there's opinions. This is the Maharal and the Netziv, that they say that if you eat two kazesim, you get two mitzvahs, three kazesim, three mitzvahs, etc. So if you're not limited and you're young and healthy, so go for it. You know, you're able to have the bigger shear that I just mentioned.
That would be
the shear of the tzlach, right?
Yeah,
The tzlach with the double beitza. Now, if we go to the other extreme, people who are very limited because of health reasons, and there are many, many different reasons why people are not able to eat that much. So if you want to know then you could definitely go with the Chazon Ish. What the Chazon Ish himself had was the size a little bit less than the palm of a hand without the fingers. I measure, if I can give like a shear for the that everyone can relate to in a simple way, a credit card. A standard credit card has a surface area of 43 square centimeters. 36 square centimeters is enough. So we're talking about something a little bit less than a credit card.
And that would be the size of an olive, a mid-sized olive.
Right.
Now, and it's worth noting that for the sheer mitzi matzo, you'd have to eat twice as much of each, which would be two credit cards.
No. All the Poskim said that is only, I need to point out, sorry, all the Poskim said that the only person who has to eat two kazesim is the person who is running the Seder who has three matzahs. Because the whole point of two kazaisim is to have a kazais from the top matzah and a kazais from the middle matzah. But the other people by the Seder that are not going to end up with a kazais from each matzah anyway, there's no point in them eating two kazaisim from the box that's on the side, because then they haven't accomplished anything with that. So they're allowed l'chatchila to have just one kazais.
Okay, so it's either smaller than a credit card, which would be an olive.
Yeah.
A third of a for the surface size of machine matzah would be a chatzi beitza.
Mm-hmm.
2/3, which would be a whole beya, which would be the shita of the Nei Debi Yehuda.
Very, very well summarized.
Rabbi Margolin, thank you very much for your time. It's an honor to have you on with us.
It's been a pleasure. Chag kosher v'sameach to all of Am Yisrael.
Kol tov.
Kol tov.